Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Capella setting that pick. Goes to the basket for a monster slam. Cliff Capella. Folks, you're going to have to come out to Toyota Center to see this guy dunk. It is impressive in person.
If you guys want a case for optimism heading into the 2016-2017 season, Clint Capella might be it in Houston. Entering his third year and now primed for major minutes after Dwight Howard's departure, a lot of folks are expecting a breakout year from him in the middle, and really, I am too. We'll get into that momentarily. First, introductions. I'm, of course, Ben Dubose. I'm your host. This is Locked On Rockets, the one and only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And our goal is basically to be your insider for the team. We want to give you the scoop on everything that's going on at Toyota Center, and we want to be there for you on a daily basis. So we hope you give this a try, and we hope you keep coming back. If you have questions, ask me at Ben Dubose. You can reach the account at Locked On Rockets. And really, we want to be your voice. We want to be your connection to the Houston Rockets. And as we let off the show saying, Clint Capella is going to be a big theme both for the rest of this offseason and especially as the season gets going, because entering his third year, his potential to be a legit starting center, a double-double guy that excels in the pick and roll, is something that has Rockets fans legitimately excited about the Mike D'Antoni era, which needs guys like that in the middle that can move in space. And really, if you want a case for how the Rockets can be significantly better than a year ago, that's where it starts. And there's a great article this week. I urge you guys to read it over on RealGM.com. It's titled, Houston Rockets, How to Make the Offseason Win Work on the Court. And it addresses all the moves the Rockets have made so far this offseason, the additions of Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, the signing of Nene. But beyond that, it talks about the scheme fit for those guys and the existing roster under Mike D'Antoni. It's written by Brett Koromenos. He's formerly a Grantland writer, now writes with Real GM. He's also a trainer and coach on the side. And he brings a ton of independent insight onto really everything to do with the team. So rather than getting the typical groupthink that we hear from a lot of the national media, I think his article provides a lot of insight, and really it starts with Clint Capella. Early on, he says that the Rockets, quote, caught another break when Dwight Howard skipped town and freed up an opportunity for Clint Capella. And that's pretty high praise, seeing as how Dwight Howard's earning over $20 million a year with the Atlanta Hawks. So that tells you what people around the league think Clint Capella can do. And so to touch on that subject, as well as other things going on with the Rockets, rather than me just tell you, I want to get Brett on the show and let him explain it yourself and let him make the case for optimism. So rather than give you the same old tried and true, we'll see, are they going to play any defense, I think you're going to be pretty impressed with what Brett Koromenos thinks of this team. So if you guys will hold on one moment, let's get Brett on the phone and have him join Locked On Rockets on this Wednesday. All right, now we've got Brett Koromenos on the phone with us. Brett, of course, is a writer for Real GM. He's written for Grantland in the past. He's also a trainer and a coach. Brett, how's it going today?
It's going good, Ben. How are you doing?
Oh, can't complain. Been talking the last few minutes about your article, basically about the Rockets offseason, and it's gotten a lot of shares here in Houston because of your optimism around the team. And there are a lot of places to start, but I think the simplest thing is your view of the Mike D'Antoni hire. Because right in the middle of it, you mentioned that, and I'm just going to quote you directly in your article, despite some less than stellar records with the Knicks and Lakers and a slightly over-exaggerated aversion to defense, D'Antoni is still a top-flight caliber coach. Why do you still see Mike D'Antoni as a good coach in the NBA when a lot of guys are, you know, pessimistic about his fit in Houston?
Well, I mean, I think the pessimism, I guess to kind of go backwards, I think the pessimism has roots just more so in the fact that, there is going to have to be some buy-in, from James Harden. And, you know, anytime that you talk about a superstar and a head coach getting along, you know, it's not something that you can just take for granted that it's going to happen. And there are some things that James would have to change about his game, you know, especially in the playmaking aspect of it in order to make Mike's system work. Because, you know, as we've seen it, you know, it works really well when, you know, Jeremy Lin was in New York and, you know, obviously with Nash and Phoenix. You know, he needs a guy that's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, that's going to make the team function better and not just be able to hijack possession for his own offense. But the reason that, I'm optimistic about his hire is, you know, you look at the way the NBA is played now, and that's all his stuff. I mean, the influence of the tempo and the pace and the ball movement and the pick and roll and spreading the floor with shooters and going small, you know, that was all things that he was doing over 10 years ago. And now we're seeing that you can win championships like that. And that's where the general league is shifting. And then, you know, part of it is from my standpoint is, you know, you get a guy that, you know, gets a reputation. If you really look deep at his issues in LA and New York, it was just nothing that really had much to do with him. You know, the New York team was actually playing really well with Raymond Felton and Amari. You know, and then the Melo trade was more something to do with the owner wanting Carmelo Anthony in New York, not necessarily about the fit and the progress the program was making without him. And so that gutted some guys that fit his system really well in Gallinari and Wilson Chandler, and then put in a guy that, you know, has been, now that we see it, has been killed for his inability to move the ball and kind of focus on getting his own offense before getting his teammates involved. And even at the time, he didn't want to even move up to what we now view as his best position, which is that four spot.
Yep.
And so it just was a bad fit. You know, so you can look at it like it has something to do with Mike D'Antoni, and I don't care who you would have got. You know, you could have got Thibodeau to coach a roster that had Melo at the three, Amari at the four, or Melo at the five or four, and Amari at the five, and you are going to get good defensive results out of that team. You know, part of it is always going to be you're beholden to your personnel. And then you go to LA, and, you know, at the same token, he had the same problems. You know, he inherited a roster that had Dwight Howard and Pau Gasol on it. You know, Pau Gasol is a guy that, you know, he's an interesting guy to look back through the lens of history. He's helped some teams become really successful, and he's obviously a very accomplished, you know, Hall of Fame caliber player. But he's another dude that in today's game should move to the five, should want to roll the rim, but he always wanted to play the four. And he's not good enough. He's not that stretch four that you need to make a system like Mike's go. And then at the same token, you have Kobe Bryant, and you've seen, everybody saw over the last couple of years that despite his greatness, the fact that dude couldn't come to grips that he was not able to score and do the things that he had been able to do during his incredible prime. And it completely, you know, hijacked the last 2 years of the Lakers franchise. And the same thing happened when he was with D'Antoni. And, you know, so you kind of look back at those quote-unquote failures, and a lot of it was circumstantial. I mean, it just was stuff that was out of his control, not necessarily reflective of the fact that dude couldn't coach. And, you know, when you get him in Houston, you know, you kind of see some pieces. You know, Capella is, like, the ideal guy for him. You know, here's a kid that's a great role finisher. You know, I watched a bunch of film on him before I wrote the article, and I was really shocked. I thought he was mostly just a guy that could, you know, he rolled the rim, and if he threw it at the rim, he could dunk it, and he couldn't do much else. But that kid had, you know, finishes where he would put the ball on the deck for a dribble and kind of evade a big man coming back into the play, you know, finishing with both hands. You know, obviously he's a fantastic offensive rebounder. You know, he's a mobile big that you could hopefully mold into someone that can, you know, anchor a pretty good defense and protect the rim. And, you know, James Harden could be a 25-10 guy if he buys into moving the ball and taking good shots and getting teammates involved and playing up tempo and all those things. You know, and then you got a bunch of shooting around him now. Ryan Anderson is obviously, that's his thing. You know, Eric Gordon has always been able to shoot really well, and he can just flat out score it. You know, Trevor Ariza and Beverly have turned themselves into very good 3-point shooters at the NBA level. So there are pieces there, that, you know, to see the fit really coming together and bringing some optimism to, you know, after a pretty lackluster season of things just never meshing. You know, there are some things that are moving together and making this unit more cohesive. And, you know, the guy can still coach offense.
Right.
And if this team is a top three team in offensive efficiency, you know, you only need to be about 10th or 11th, you know, to still be a contender, you know, to win a championship. If you're that good on one end of the floor, you just kind of need to be okay on the other. I think there's a misconception that, you know, you have to be great defensively to win, you know, but we've kind of seen, you know, Golden State was obviously incredible on both ends before, you know, that helps too. I mean, if you can be top five on both ends, obviously that's ideal. But like the Mavericks championship in 2011 was a prime example of that. I mean, that was a pretty average defensive team that was just lights out on offense when they beat Miami that year.
Yep.
And I think you can have sustained success by just being really, really good on offense these days.
We're talking with Brett Koromenos. He wrote a great article on Real GM earlier this week. If you want to view it, you can Google Houston Rockets, how to make the offseason win work on the court. And Brett, one of the things you mentioned was Clint Capella. In your story, you actually had a quote that caught my eye saying that they actually caught another break when Dwight Howard skipped town and freed up an opportunity for Clint Capella, who you noted is an excellent pick-and-roll finisher in the 84th percentile, actually, an offensive rebounder where he was sixth among all qualified players. At this point in their careers, is Clint Capella a better fit, especially in Mike D'Antoni's system, than Dwight Howard?
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, when you really, you know, follow the NBA and you're around it, you know, like certain people are for their jobs, you know, Dwight Howard as a player is obviously very talented, but there's something to be said for the fact that there is value in a player understanding what he needs to be really successful.
Yes.
Imagine how good Dwight Howard would be if he just was happy setting screens, rolling to the rim, finishing, doing all those things, instead of trying to prove that he was a classic 1990s era center, you know, posting up and getting buckets that way. You know, and there's something to be said for the fact that a guy that's just willing to do a job that doesn't demand the basketball can make your whole offense function better. You know, generally it's the addition by subtraction argument. You know, Dwight Howard as a player in a vacuum is obviously has more value, especially in his prime, than Clint Capella does. But Capella is going to do the things that fit in better around everyone else that's on that roster. So if you look at it in context, Capella is actually a better fit for this team winning basketball games. He may not be a better individual player, but fit is of vital importance in terms of getting a team to be successful. And that's why I think, like, this is a thing that, you know, people see the name and they go, you know, Dwight left, how are they going to be better? Well, sometimes the guy just needs to play a role, and then that role, you know, him being good in that role turns out to be way more impactful than a star name doing things outside of the role they need the team to be successful.
Yeah. And speaking of Houston big men, you also wrote some interesting things about Nene that coincided with what I had heard. I had heard from someone close to Nene that he thought that basically the Wizards were not fully utilizing him. He thought that his role in Washington, he was used pretty much strictly as a post player, whereas he was drawn to Houston, and of course he signed 1 year, $2.9 million, the room exception, definitely below market value. I had heard that Nene was drawn to D'Antoni's system, and basically the role that D'Antoni could use him as a passer and as an ability to do things besides just be a big man on the low block. Do you see Nene as a good fit here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Nene that you always have to caution about is the injury thing is something that at this point is a sustained pattern. Like, he is going to miss games, and that's always hard for a team to kind of, you know, count for, because you know he's going to be gone, you don't know how much, and you just kind of cross your fingers and hope it's not the crucial time of the year. But as far as when he's healthy, you know, it definitely, you know, there's some things on film, you know, in Washington where they had certain, I don't know if they had necessarily rules in their offense. You know, one was definitely a rule where when Marcin Gortat was low on the baseline, those two were playing together, if he set the screen, then they would always have to stay higher on the floor. You know, and then the other thing, too, is their guards get a lot of what's called an under coverage, where when the guy comes up and sets the screen, the on-ball defender shoots under the pick because he doesn't respect his shooting ability. And then on those situations, then they would just hang back on the floor. And, you know, in Mike's system, you need at least one guy when he sets the screen to kind of go through the paint and suck that defense in and make them respect that there's a guy going towards the basket untouched so those passes can be made or he can catch and finish at the rim. And I think, you know, if Nene is committed to rolling hard and doing kind of the blue collar job of catching those passes and, you know, either trying to finish at the rim or moving it out again to another open shooter. You know, he's a very talented passer. I mean, he's one of the rare big guys that kind of can put the ball on the deck like a guard and then throw this one hand pass across the court to a wide open guy. There are only maybe a handful of big men that can really do stuff like that, especially at the speed that that game moves at. You know, and then, you know, there also are going to be sets in D'Antoni's offense where, you know, that you throw it back to a big, and then the guards will go screen away for each other, and then you need a big man that can kind of thread passes when a guy, you know, slips the screen and goes to the rim. You know, Capella isn't a guy that's going to be able to really maybe do that, at least not right now, but Nene can take those situations and make him a real advantage for an offense because he can read two guys screening and thread a perfect pass right down the middle, and then it's an easy layup. And it's just something you don't get with most bigs that can't pass like that. So, I mean, there's going to be some opportunities for him to be very impactful in that reserve role.
Yep.
You know, depending on how much he commits to rolling hard, and then, you know, but definitely in terms of some of the sets that you'll see in plays that will be in, you know, he'll be able to really bridge the gap between the starters and the reserve unit, which is, you know, crucial for winning in the NBA.
Yep. Brett, looking at the guards, we've talked about the big men. When you look at the guards in Houston, I thought you made some interesting points about the depth or lack thereof behind James Harden. And with regards to D'Antoni, you mentioned that one of the challenges he's going to have is overcoming his desire to maybe play guys too many minutes. So when it comes to, you know, making sure these guys are rested come playoff time, and, you know, as you said, a Spurs-like devotion to minute management, the key is going to be guards other than James Harden stepping up to relieve some of the scoring burden. And so to me, even though the Rockets have added a lot this offseason in terms of scorers, they're really going to be dependent on Eric Gordon's health, because Gordon's really the only guy other than Harden who can, you know, somewhat create his own offense. In other words, for those 12 to 15 minutes a game that you want Harden to sit down, it seems like they're going to be very dependent on Gordon to hopefully stay healthy and kind of anchor the offense from the perimeter during those minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's 100% right. I mean, you know, they brought in a guy like Frigioni, who, you know, solid veteran, you know, can run the team and kind of play off, you know, James Harden and get you into your sets. But, you know, when you every NBA team needs like a fulcrum. They need a guy that's going to shift the defense just by his presence or his ability in certain actions on the floor. And, you know, like you said, if Gordon goes down, it's pretty much James Harden is the only guy.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't just throw the ball into anybody anymore. They're not going to get a buck in the post. You can't ISO guys. They don't have guards that are great in pick and roll. So at that point, you're just hoping that, you know, teams can kind of just run great offense and find shots. But if you don't have anybody that can really bend it, the defense doesn't shift enough to create those gaps and openings you need to find, you know, the high-efficient shots that these coaches want nowadays. So it's going to be a problem. It's definitely going to be something that's going to come up. And if you, you know, you do a post-mortem on a season that's less than that's disappointing for them, it's probably going to be linked back to the fact that Gordon, you know, gets injured and then he just didn't have anything behind him.
Yeah.
It would have been a move that you hoped that maybe they brought in like a combo scoring guard, you know, one of those 6'1 guys that, you know, you maybe don't like because he's more of a shooting guard than a traditional point guard. But you can kind of turn your second unit over to him and he can go get some points for you. And I think, you know, that's something that the Houston front office will have to be kind of on the lookout for, you know, whether it's the guy that went down to the D-League putting up good numbers and maybe they can give him a call-up, or whether they got to move someone like that's a little bit superfluous nowadays, like a Corey Brewer or a KJ McDaniel, to get that type of player. It's going to have to be on their radar, and it's really going to hurt if Gordon or Harden miss time, because then they'll basically have one guy that can kind of run offense.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be my next question is, you know, what's the hole on this roster? But to take it another step with the injuries, obviously Harden's the star and hopefully an MVP candidate if he's healthy and if he fits into Mike D'Antoni's system the way I think we both believe he can. As far as secondary behind him, you can mount compelling arguments for Ryan Anderson now making $80 million, Eric Gordon at $53 million. But you actually wrote in your article that other than Harden, Trevor Ariza might be the most vital player when it comes to the Rockets' success. Can you elaborate on that and why you think Ariza is so important for this particular Rockets team?
Well, I think in general in the NBA, you have to be able to, especially when you close down games, be able to play, I guess, what I call two-way lineups, which is lineups that don't have holes on one end of the floor or the other. So you can play a bunch of defenders, but then if they all can't shoot or they can't do anything on offense, you know, it's going to be a net loss when you play that lineup. And if you play a bunch of guys that can score, but they can't defend against the vast majority of personnel they're going to see at their position, that's also going to be a problem. And Ariza is really the only guy that can give them like a high quality two-way lineup, you know, that can close out games. And to me, you know, what I think will be their end game lineup, you know, especially against teams that go small, is going to be some version of Capella, Ariza, Harden, Gordon, and Beverly. And that group is a really good group because you have a versatile defender that can defend, you know, threes and fours in Ariza. You have a great defender in Beverly at the point of attack. And then you just got to hope that Gordon, you know, kind of can buy into at least, you know, bringing the effort on that end of the floor and tackle, you know, some wing responsibilities there. And then you can hopefully hide Harden somewhere. You know, usually against every lineup except maybe Golden State nowadays, you know, there's always going to be that one guy that you can stash somebody on. And, you know, and it's not necessarily a dig at Harden's defense, which I know that's, you know, pretty nationally known thing now is the shots that he gets for his defensive focus. But it's also for the fact that Harden is going to have so much heavy lifting offensively, you kind of want to just save his energy on the defense in the floor and not have him have to be a two-way guy and tax himself there so he's ready to go get your points on the other end.
Yeah.
And Ariza is kind of the guy that bridges the gap of giving them a two-way line. Because Ryan Anderson is gonna struggle in a lot of matchups against some of the better teams, especially in the playoffs. If you try to put him on the floor as a four, even as a five, he's going to cause you problems defensively. And if you lose Ariza, you lose the one guy that can give you the quality on both ends, where he can knock down shots on one end and kind of switch across positions and guard smaller fours and tangle with, you know, some of the elite threes that he's going to see on the defensive end. And if he goes down, there's nothing that they have that can replicate that. And that's a pretty big thing. When you're talking about the fine margins of winning deep into the playoffs, you need to have stuff like that, you know, covered. I mean, you can make a case that any team, for the most part, other than Golden State, if they lose one player, you know, their championship window closes. But, you know, if Houston really wants to max everything out, like, that dude needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, and that ties back into another excellent point, which you touched on. You wrote about the question with Ryan Anderson isn't about starting, but can he finish? And you compared it to the Cleveland situation with Kevin Love, in which defensively there are just some matchups, especially in the playoffs, where you don't want him in the game down the stretch. And so with the Rockets right now, the way they're constructed, if you've got to go small and switch more, Trevor Ariza is really the only guy you can put at the four where that's going to work. You know, Brewer is too slender. Monty Unis, even if he re-signs, he's got some of the same problems in terms of foot speed that Ryan Anderson does. So really, Trevor Ariza as a small ball four in crunch time, that's more important than a lot of Rockets fans think. Last question. I want to think big picture. You led this off talking about Mike D'Antoni and the ultimate question of if Harden fully embraces it. I want to look at the case for optimism. You wrote, and I'm just going to quote you directly, if Harden buys into his new coach's approach, an MVP caliber season with unseen efficiency could be in the cards. And if Houston's offense is humming at a top 3-5 level, the defense just has to be good enough for D'Antoni to make this Rockets squad a real threat out west. What is the upside? Let's say if Harden buys in, if he's that 25-10 guy that we talked about earlier, how good can this group be?
I definitely think it. You know, health is obviously the other coinciding factor.
Yeah.
I mean, guys like Harden and Gordon and you know, Ariza all staying healthy. You know, those are other ifs that need to have good answers coming back. You know, if those guys can all stay healthy. But I mean, if that stuff goes and things break that way and Harden buys in, I mean, this is going to be a really good team. This is going to be a 50-plus win team, you know, with the capability, depending on their matchup, to maybe even push to a Western Conference Finals. You know, it's going to be a good basketball club. I mean, obviously, Golden season that they had, and so you're kind of fighting for second place.
Yeah.
But you know, the way that D'Antoni can, with his approach to offense and with what that system does, is taking a whole and elevating it way above the sum of their parts. You know, if you get a team that is that good, and Harden is making guys around him better, you know, because for all the individual talent that guy has, you know, part of what made Nash great wasn't in Mike's system, wasn't so much the shooting or, you know, his great passing. It was the fact that he had balance in his game. He could score when he needed to, and he could make guys better around him. And, you know, the joke was, you played for D'Antoni, and with Nash, you were going to go get paid from somebody. And, you know, Nash got guys paid around him. And, you know, that was a point of pride, even, I think, for him. I think he actually has come out publicly and used to say that he used to love the fact that he could get guys contracts. And that's kind of what the mentality that, you know, Harden needs to take on is that, you know, he can go out and get 40 every single night, especially in a system like D'Antoni's. But it's his ability to get other guys off for 20 and 25 that, you know, most teams come in and they're not worried about. And then all of a sudden, Ariza has 30, or Patrick Beverley has 30, or something like, or Capella has 25, all on great role finishes. And that's the thing that Harden has to buy in on. If he can do that, that team, and he definitely has the ability to do so. I mean, that team can go from 500 to 50, 55 wins and be a real threat to make a Western Conference Finals and try to tangle with Golden State for a trip to the big dance.
I think everybody in Houston's going to like to hear that. Brett, thanks so much for the time, buddy. Why don't you toss out, you know, your Twitter handle as well as, you know, your outlets, basically where fans in Houston can find any of your work.
I still kind of hang out and write a little bit here and there for Real GM, so you can obviously find me out there. And then my Twitter handle is at B Cormenis, so it's the B and then my long last name, although I'm not too active on there anymore. But, you know, keep reading Real GM. They do good work over there. My editor, Chris Reyna, does a great job. So you guys are looking for good content. It's a good place to go. But thanks for having me on, by the way, Ben.
Sure thing. Thanks for joining us. That was Brett Cormenis. We really appreciate his time. And if you haven't read it, I urge you to go to realgm.com and read his article entitled Houston Rockets, How to Make the Offseason Win Work on the Court. Thought he absolutely had some tremendous perspective. I think this time of year, there's so much of a tendency for national writers to kind of devolve into groupthink. And, you know, ESPN puts the Rockets as 41-41, the number 8 seed, because that's where they were a year ago, and no one wants to go out on a limb, because if they're wrong, then they're going to get made fun of, and yada yada. So everybody just sort of sticks with the status quo, and you don't have a lot of independent analysis. One thing I love about Brett, and think he's a great writer, he is very much an independent thinker. He was formerly with Grantland, now he's with Real GM. He also is a trainer and a coach on the side. He told me he's currently training about 5 NBA players right now. So he doesn't fall into that groupthink mentality to where, you know, the Rockets are a 41-win team and a number 8 seed, and until they show me something different, that's what I'm going to say because, you know, it gives me plausible deniability. I think that's the thought process for a lot of these national predictions. And Brett, he's a good independent guy. He will tell it like it is. He believes in Mike D'Antoni, and I think he just made a pretty compelling case for why, if James Harden buys into the system and if he produces the way we think he can, that this team is not just going to be better than last year, but potentially can be a 50 to 55 win group and contend for a Western Conference final spot. So if you want a case for optimism, Rockets fans, I think Brett just gave it to you. And on that note, I think that's a good spot to end it for this Wednesday. This is Ben DuBose. You can always find me at Ben DuBose. You can reach us at the show at Locked On Rockets or at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's our official email address for advertising inquiries or any kind of longer questions. And really, I do urge you guys to get in questions, be it by email or Twitter, because we have a weekly Twitter mailbag segment that we do at the end of every week. We're going to be doing that again in the next couple of days. So if you have questions about the rotation, the rest of free agency, where things stand with Donatus Moniunis, any Rockets topic under the sun, just let us know, because again, we want to be your voice. We want to be your bridge from Rockets fandom on Twitter to what's actually going on at Toyota Center. We are the only daily podcast covering the Rockets, and we are very excited about it. So anything we can do to help you guys become more enthused and, you know, learn more about the team, that's what I'm here to do. So let me know, And in the meantime, we'll sign off on this episode. Again, I'm Ben DuBose. You can talk to me at Ben DuBose, and we'll be with you tomorrow, Houston.